Well, welcome to Depending How You Count. Is this week 2.5? How can you start on a Thursday? It's so confusing. Whatever week it is, welcome back. Lecture 3, September 7th, 2022. I am still Dr. Marks, and we're going to pick up on the last line of lecture notes, page 30, at the very bottom. So one of my colleagues in the college over the break went out to somewhere in Seattle, met up with a bunch of buds, younger colleague, and the guy said, yeah, a friend of mine had you 6 years ago. He's in accounting, and he still remembers you. I said, accounting remembers me in a good way? He said, yeah. So chit-chat, chit-chat. I'm chatting with one of the students up here. His dad had me for something in marketing. That was 115 years ago, though. So you never know where you're going to find people, I'll tell you. This is a nice event. My wife is so happy. I took a pile of T-shirts this high and gave them away to this event because she likes to get rid of stuff. I like old stuff, old T-shirts, me and it's. So anyhow, this is the Career Service Officers partnering with Flash's Fighting Hunger to create a reusable T-shirt bag for the food pantry patron as a part of their Networking for Good events on October 21st. You can donate gently used T-shirts that your boyfriend, girlfriend, wife, husband doesn't want you to have laying around anymore or you got tired of. Outside the dean's office on the third floor, I just dropped off a big stack. And or you could get involved with the event itself, Friday, October 21st, 12:30 to 2:30 in the Kent State Student Center, room 218. You can network with employer partners, meet them, chat with them, build relationships with them. Because I don't know, eventually, how many of you guys eventually want a job when you get done here? About 10 people do. I'm wondering what the other people are going to do, but that's good. So it never hurts to network with people. So gradebook heads up, I had a couple questions about this, so because we have the two sections combined, oh, I forgot, hi Webbies, how you doing? Forgot to mention you guys. We have two sections combined, so the gradebook shows both sections there. In addition, more to the point, I guess, we have standard time students and extended time students, so it's all one big gradebook. So you go in and suddenly you see something missing, and you go, oh my, did I miss it? As long as you've taken the test you were supposed to take, then the other one says missing, you're good. If the one you're supposed to take says missing, you have an issue, right? So it will say missing, it's because we have both types of students in the course, otherwise you're good. So for mini test one, I was quite liberal, generous. I did not lock down the desktop because hypothetically you couldn't get the book, so you could use the e-text online, blah, 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 blah. How many people have been able to get the physical book? Anybody try and not able to get it? Just curious what they're telling you. Here at the bookstore?
Yeah.
Okay, is this more, I'm curious if they ran out. More recently or like last week?
I just looked like earlier.
Okay, so you want to check with them because hypothetically at least it's there now and available. So anyhow, you now have the physical copy of the book, which is what you'll need for the midterm and the final. And you'll have the notes, hypothetically. So I'm locking down the browser. So if you took the sample exam that had the browser locked down, now when you go to take mini test two, once again, browser's locked down. Issues, questions, problems, you may know. For most of us, it's going to work just fine. Any questions on that? So how do we do overall? I never quite figure out why we don't have 100% of the students taking the test, but we have a large number of students. Some people don't do it. So 97% of the students took it. Average score, 91%. That's pretty good. Good job overall. Some people stop with a low score and just let it go. Your grade, you do what you want to do. Whatever. But anyhow, 91, good job. So upcoming mini test two, that will cover now that we have this odd break, instead of covering Monday and Tuesday, or Monday and Wednesday, lecture one and lecture two, it's now going to start covering Wednesday and Monday. So it's going to cover lecture three and lecture four. Today is Wednesday, lecture three. Monday will be lecture four. Mini test two will open on Tuesday. It'll be open Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. 5 days should be enough time. Issues, questions, problems, let me know. So that's the new schedule till we lose another day and we change again. Okay, questions on that? Business in the news. I just asked my freshman year experience course this question. I was surprised at the answer. So let me ask the same question here. How many of you have been to Disneyland or Disney World? An amazing number to me. I did not, your parents must all be very wealthy. It's expensive to go there. That's great. Webbies? You too, that's amazing. So I'm surprised at the number of people that have gone. Meanwhile though, Disney's new pricing magic more profit from fewer park visitors. Over the past 2 years, as Florida's Walt Disney World Resort and Southern California's Disneyland Resort have emerged from the shadow of the coronavirus pandemic, the company's made a host of changes that have been set that have sent the cost of a visit to Disney Resort skyward. So we're seeing the pandemic effects on business. When we went in, as we're coming out, it's affecting business and marketing. And we're seeing a changing business strategy given the changing environmental impact of the pandemic. The outcome is a bonanza for Disney. Even as the company limits the number of visitors and keeps attendance at its U.S. theme parks below pre-pandemic levels, they're generating record sales and profits. So we're seeing a relationship among demand, pricing, revenue, profits. The obvious answer, this is going to be a really hard question, how can a business keep attendance steady or even lower and still be making record sales and profits? How can they do that? What's the answer? They're raising prices. And you might argue, well, geez, it's sort of a discretionary thing. We're in an inflation. Aren't people going to stop going? Not so much. They're still going. So you have this interesting idea when prices rise. Do you guys remember from microecon price elasticity of demand? What happens when those prices go up to demand? Or here you have something that for most people seems to be pretty inelastic, interestingly. The results reflect a major strategy shift on Disney's part, where the company is focused less on maximizing the quantity of visitors and more on increasing how much money each visitor spends, an approach that the company refers to as yield management. So there's pricing in the marketing mix. We will talk much later on about yield management as a pricing strategy. We'll have a slightly different view of what yield management is, but that's fine. That's their definition. Improving the visitor experience, the thinking goes, will prompt guests to spend more hours and therefore more money at the parks because they're having such a good time. If that's the way it plays out, less crowds, I guess, a better experience, I guess. You stay there longer, I guess. You spend more money, bada-bink, bada-boop, increase sales and revenues and profits. So important to the customer experience. The biggest change in the past few years, most lucrative for Disney, is the introduction of a smartphone app feature called Genie Plus. That feature, you can get it for you, your family members, maybe there's four of you, costs $15 a day additional on top of your admission fee. But wait, there's more. Once you have that, you can skip unreserved lines for some attractions, which the company calls standby, so you can then get additional service features available for a price. For example, to skip the standby line at the most sought-after attractions, including some with my Star Wars guy. Somebody had a Star Wars, and Guardians of the Galaxy themed rides, reservations now cost, you pay the admission, you paid for Genie Plus, an additional $10 to $17 for each of your family members that's there to jump the line for the popular rides. Standby waits for popular attractions can last hours. Of those who pay for Genie Plus, though, 70% say in post-visit surveys that they do plan to make use of it again. So 70% of the folks were not especially bothered by the need to spend those extra dollars. So here's supply, demand, price, and customer satisfaction all tied together. Disney's theme park pricing is determined by pure supply and demand, said a company spokeswoman. No different than airplanes, hotels, or cruise ships. So there's their pricing strategy for now. Of course, not everyone likes these changes. I guarantee you, no matter what you do as a business person, as a marketer, not everybody's going to like whatever it is you do. So given the rising costs, some current customers say they'll consider rival attractions at Universal Studios, at SeaWorld. Returning to Disney every year for them is no longer an option. So indeed, it's not that everybody's willing to pay more money. There's competition in the marketplace. I think I'll go there instead of here. We'll shift. So here's pricing consumers' reactions. For other segments, the strategy still works well. A lot of people say, oh, I can go to Europe for cheaper. But Disney now holds the last really good memories of my dad. So for me, it's important to go to Disney. I can always make more money, but going to Disney has an emotional attachment for me. So here's the idea of understanding consumer emotional reactions in the marketing mix. So so I did not get a total price to go for a few days to Disney, but I suspect it's pretty expensive. Who knows bonobos? Bonobos? One person. Just one? Bonobos. Okay, so bonobos, I had to call my kid, who's a Manhattanite now. He's no longer in a Highland. He lives in Manhattan, and he dresses much better than I do. And I said, do you know bonobos? He said, funny thing, I'm outside a bonobos store right now. He was on his way to take a coffee break in between going back to work after 7 p.m., work in New York City. Your call to Bonobos might not be answered by the next available agent. Seeking to provide better customer service, the Bonobos menswear chain, that's what it is, asks its staff in its retail stores to also engage with customers in online chats. Who's worked retail? How many of you guys would love the opportunity not just to serve your in-store guests, but also to chat online with customers? Not seeing a lot of hands right now going up, but this is their strategy. So here's their retail strategy, and from their perspective, the importance of customer service. When Bonobos was struggling with widespread shipping problems this past spring, the people dealing with the barrage of angry customer inquiries weren't typical agents in a call center. They were Bonobos workers inside the company's retail stores. So we see the impact of pandemic on marketing. There were supply chain issues. Customers were mad. We tried to talk to them all. We have limited staff. Let's get more of our staff involved. So innovation in customer service. The menswear company that started out as an online brand, so it's an online digital native store, has since opened dozens of retail shops and has been using its store workers, which it calls guides, to answer many online customer chats. So here's a channel distribution strategy shifting from digital only to digital plus real life. It's an unusual hybrid approach to managing customer service as companies from airlines to retailers have confronted a basic challenge, having enough staff to answer inquiries and to assist customers, especially during and after the pandemic. So we're seeing businesses deal with the impact of the pandemic in marketing. Some experts say they see merit in Bonobo's hybrid style approach, which seeks to spread inquiries among the people most familiar with its products. Bonobos tells employees that the in-store experience always comes first, and managing the online chat shouldn't come at the expense of helping an in-shop customer. Employees should only be using the chat in stores during downtimes when there's at least one other guide present. They call their staff guides. So we're prioritizing our work. It's been a positive shift, says the operations and finance chief. Guides get to broaden their skill set and have more opportunity to interact with their customers. Hypothetically good, I guess. A way to hypothetically build customer intimacy and relationships. But some Bonobos employees say the policy works better in theory than in reality. Several said they feel inclined to continue an online chat when a customer enters the store. How you juggling the two? They also said it can be difficult to manage all of the angry online messages as chats. While not perfect, this hybrid customer service concept has promise. For companies like Bonobos that have both digital and physical encounters with customers, it makes sense for the same people with the same training to handle both online and in person to ensure the experiences are more consistent. So hypothetically better customer retail experience. Although I didn't see a lot of hands going up saying, yeah, I'm digging in that as a staff member. Maybe it's in your future if your company's also online. Finally, Intel reignites its signature bong. Do you know what I'm saying when I say the signature bong, the sound that they use? Anybody know what that sound is? What is it?
It's like a...
Do you recall it?
It's like a do, 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 do.
Yeah, bong, 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 bong is what they do. Now, I bring this up because A, it's come back, and B, much later in the course, we'll talk about bong, 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 bong as a marketing strategy. Yesterday, Intel released a new campaign titled How Wonderful Is That?, which aims to cement Intel's continued relevancy among today's consumers. So we're working on our brand image with our customers. Some added star power. The brand tapped gaming influencer Najala, comedic creator Elise Myers, and SM Entertainment's rising girl brand Aespa. So we're using celebrities in advertising. See if this appeals to you as young people or not. This is you're who they're trying to appeal to.
Bum, 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 bum.
How many tacos did you order?
100.
What?
The technology inside, the technology that moves the world. How wonderful is that? Intel.
So we're trying to show all the places that our product is used. The minute-long span expands beyond Intel's CPU roots to illustrate how widespread its technology has grown, powering everything from vending machines to streaming platforms. So we're trying to build brand awareness and our image. Most people know Intel for computers, but the expansive list of big, cool, important things that Intel technology powers is staggering, says their global CCO. Just because you can't see or touch it doesn't mean you shouldn't celebrate it. The spot weaves in a few pop cultural Easter eggs, including a reference to Meyer's viral story about a bad Taco Bell date. Does anybody know that comedic story from Myers? Nope, we don't know. You do? One person does? Espa's transformation from humans to digital avatars. Eagle-eyed fans of Ninjala may enjoy one particular gift hidden on her bedroom wall, a QR code that leads to an exclusive sit-down with the streamer herself. So appealing to those target consumers. In each quick scene, the sonic bomb, 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 bomb is reimagined to fit a specific scenario, painting Intel as a ubiquitous part of our tech-heavy day-to-day lives. Beyond that, the brand is showing a working knowledge of today's digital creativity scene and fandom culture through this new work, along with how its technology can aid and enhance all of it. So we're trying to be culturally relevant too. Campaign will run via search engine marketing, digital, YouTube, connected, linear TV, cinema, audio, and OOH, out of home, like billboards and stuff. So there's our media strategy. So marketing across everything, it's out there. Pick it up with lecture notes, page 30 at the very bottom, and page 16 in the textbook. And so we left off last time thinking about some of the marketing philosophies, the marketing strategies. And we had a series of notes about these philosophies and how they were impacted, a variety of things. So firms have to identify customer needs and continue to do so because they keep changing. Competition will force you to focus on the consumer or take your consumer away. And we have to see these consumers in the context of all environmental marketing factors. We have to have a market orientation. So, one more time, differing a bit from what the textbook says, the societal marketing concept era, after the marketing concept era, assumes that customer satisfaction should be delivered in a way that maintains or improves the customer's and society's well-being. So, when you think about it, for some product categories, a customer's needs or wants or desires may be at odds with what's good for society at large. What's an example of something that consumers want, need, desire, that isn't a good thing for society? Yeah?
Bottled water.
What kind of water?
Bottled water.
Bottled water. And why is that a bad thing?
Plastic waste.
Because of the plastic weight. How many guys drink bottled water in plastic? Okay. Not good for the environment. Should we continue to do that? Or maybe we should have cans that are recyclable and look like beer cans, and we get rid of the plastic and you still get to drink your bottled water. Oh, a different idea, maybe more socially responsible. Smoking, of course, right, is not good for yourself, not good for the environment, not good for others, and should we continue along those sorts of paths? Pollution, right, not necessarily good for the environment. So we should do things, this philosophy says, in ways that not only satisfy consumers, but does so in a way that maintains or improves the consumers and society's well-being. This relates to what we might say is the ethics of doing business. And we'll be talking more about ethics in business. But doing good while doing well, or doing well while doing good. You can do both. Who knows Patagonia? Patagonia, yeah. What are they? Outwear company, Patagonia, basically. But Patagonia is really big into the concept of what we would say socially responsible marketing. Their mission statement, we're in business to save our home planet, not to sell more product, not to create a better outwear jacket. They're saying their mission statement is we're in business to save our home planet. This is the new corporate mission statement of the company. It changes from the previous one, build the best product, cause no unnecessary harm, use business to inspire and implement solutions to the environmental crisis. I actually sort of like that one better, but you can see it's long and wordy. Save our home planet. Patagonia was led by this statement for over the previous one, the long one, for over 45 years, but the company has grown into a more integrated firm with a bigger vision, and this necessitates the change of the mission statement to what we now see. Mission should be driving your organization and what they're doing. So you have to change it periodically. Patagonia is renowned for the true green steps, such as donating 1% of its revenue to environmental causes, for making fleece jackets out of recycled bottles. Oh, if we don't have any recycled bottles, what are we going to do? For going out of its way to use organic cotton, and for mostly powering its headquarters near Los Angeles with solar panels. Less pollution. Good for them. Then we move to the customer relationship era. You don't just want to have a product sold to a consumer. You don't just want to satisfy their needs, wants, and desires when they purchase the product. You want to have a relationship with that consumer. And at every touch point they have with you, you want them to feel like they're part of your community. You care about them. They care about you, even if they're not buying a product at the moment. So this leads to the idea of CRM here, meaning customer relationship management, and the importance of that customer's experience. As they reach out and touch your website, your in-store employees, your catalog, see your ad, what experience are they getting? And is it what you want? Is it one that makes them feel like they're a part of you? Managers have to create all of these marketing tactics that fit well together. We've already said an integrated effort of the firm. You can't have one low price value thing on your website and another upscale thing in your store. It doesn't make any sense. What is this? It has to work together. And so they must coordinate the implementation of all of these things, whatever philosophy they're using. And you guys, as I mentioned, day one maybe, have the opportunity to grow, go to work in a world of whitewater rapid transition. It's crazy how fast things change. So the competitive advantage that you have today is not going to last. The thing that differentiates you from the competition and makes the consumer want to buy from you doesn't last. Customer satisfaction, what consumers expect and want from you, and the competition is going to require you to innovate, going to require you to get cost advantages, and require you to quality enhancements to stay relevant in the marketplace. So we talk about the whitewater rapids environment, lacks stability, lacks predictability, requires managers and organizations to continually adapt to change to actively survive. And who's helping to watch for all those changing environmental factors, consumer factors, competition, marketing? So you guys should be exhausted. The good news is that these rapidly occurring changes create, oftentimes, new market segments with new needs. So consumers wanted bottled water. They're buying bottled water hand over fist, lots of bottled water. Wait a minute, some people don't think that's a good idea. Having all that plastic isn't good. What about water in a can? A new segment, which said many years ago would have sounded stupid. Yeah, let's put our water in a can instead of a bottle. What are you talking about? Things change. You have to adapt. Marketing agility is the ability to quickly and efficiently act on those consumer insights that marketing research is telling you about. What the changing needs, wants, and values of the consumers are. How do they influence your consumer base? What's it mean for you? It involves balancing chaos and order, ambiguity, and speedy decision making, and short-term and long-term plans. Whew, I'm tired talking about it. And you'll be doing it. As a part of all this, marketers have to be engaged in cross-functional decision-making teams. These are groups consisting of people from different functional areas of the company. So marketers have to be talking to product developers, have to be talking to salespeople, have to be talking to customer customer satisfaction peaks. All this has to work on a common goal. These cross-functional teams have to have an integrated effort of the firm to do what? Discover and satisfy consumers' needs, wants, and desires at a profit. And maybe, depending on your company, societal good at also. Which is one reason why we make you take principles of marketing, even if you can be an accountant, or a finance person, or an HR person. Integrated teams have to work together to make the company successful with the consumers. So let's think about the breadth and the depth of marketing. And one question we could ask is, who markets? Sort of a silly question, but give me one answer. Who markets? Manufacturers market their products. For example, there's a longer list than that. So we got manufacturers, we got retailers, we have service providers, we have not-for-profit organizations, we have government, and of course you engage in marketing. You engage in marketing when you're trying to appeal to a target audience as a significant other. What are they looking for? What can you promote about yourself? You market yourself when you want that internship. How can I present myself in the best light, given what I know, given what my skills are, and they want? When you want that job, when you want that promotion, when you are in accounting and you're doing a budget presentation that represents a particular perspective, you're marketing the idea and yourself, right? So marketing occurs all over the place. Well, what is marketed? Products, right? But also we market services, ideas, how many people think that going to the moon and Mars is a great idea and we ought to do that? How many people think it's a terrible idea and we shouldn't waste our time? How many people know what either Mars or the moon is? That's everybody, that's the rest of the class, apparently. Thank you for admitting that. I'll explain after class what those things are. And so there's ideas that have to be marketed because not everybody agrees with the notion of science and space is good. Places are marketed, and of course people are marketed as well. So a wide variety of entities do marketing, a wide variety of things are marketed.
No goodness.
So here I'm going to show you several examples. Your task at the moment is to ask yourself, who's doing the marketing, what's being marketed, and maybe who they're marketing to, okay? So that'll be the follow-up questions here in a second.
No clump mascara.
So what?
Now there's new Defina Lash from Maybelline, New York. Our first clump-free that's longer, sexier, defined like never before.
Tell me more.
Only our flexible brush is shaped to the lash. Only our formula guarantees zero clumps.
Defina Lash.
Now every lash is separated, elongated.
Perfectly defined.
New Defina Lash. The clump-free look that's sexier, more refined.
Clean water for the village, but there are several villages nearby that could use our new system.
Introducing GoToMeeting with HD Faces. Simple, high-definition group video conferencing that will change the way you work. And perhaps a whole lot more. Visit GoToMeeting.com and sign up for your free 30-day trial.
How many letters?
Five letters?
Just think about what am I doing right now. Smile.
Texas travel information, go to traveltext.com or call 1-800-888-TEXT.
What's this election about? It's about the people who built this country. What's Biden done for working families? Nothing. Sold us out with NAFTA, now weakly selling us out with China. Trump, say what you want, but he has our backs. Increased our take-home pay, gave us better trade deals, playing hardball with China, bringing jobs back home. Trump, he's put American workers first.
I'm Donald J. Trump, and I approve this message.
The chief actuary of the Social Security Administration just released an analysis of Trump's planned cuts to Social Security. Under Trump's plan, Social Security would become permanently depleted by the middle of calendar year 2023. If Trump gets his way, Social Security benefits will run out in just 3 years from now. Don't let it happen. Joe Biden will protect Social Security.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
So, it wasn't that long ago that we just saw that series of videos. Somebody tell me something that was marketed and who was doing the marketing. Yeah. Maybelline marketing their mascara. They're selling a product. They are a manufacturer, and they're selling to the ultimate consumer. B2C marketing of a product. Very good. Thank you. What else do we just see? Yes, sir. Hold on, I'm going to go up there, see if you can track me without ending the recording. Sorry. The state of Texas is marketing vacations. So it's a place, probably the government. So it's probably government to consumer marketing of a place. I like the catchy tune. What else we got? Hard to remember that far back. What else we got? We got a product. We got a place. Whoops. My aerobics for the day. What else we got?
Second one was GoToMeeting, basically a service provider.
GoToMeeting, service provider.
Marketing a service.
To consumers or businesses?
Both.
Probably, though, in this case, businesses. Yeah, so B2B service marketing. Okay, business service marketing. One or two others? Yeah. You got to talk a little. Who is? They're texting. Is that what you just said? Yeah, texting. Sorry. So yeah, you're marketing the idea of don't text and drive, please, because you end up killing people. Yep. So there is probably again government to consumer. And what was the last one we just saw? The last set we just saw. Yes. Okay, so there were certainly some ideas in the Biden and Trump ads, but really what are they marketing there? The person, right? The people. We also see it in other areas as well, but there's a political set of ads which will be coming at us again soon for people. So we just saw a list of B2C, B2B, G2C for all these different sorts of entities, and that's where we see marketing. So there's my written down stuff. Manufacturer, Maybelline, marketing a product, mascara, B2C. Provider, GoToMeeting, services, video conferencing, B2B, public service announcement, so it's either B2C or G2C, how you think about it, tourism, and then the people and ideas of political candidates. So it's all everywhere. Wherever you look, somebody's doing marketing of something. So if all that's true, then who buys stuff? Well, there are two big, broad areas of who buys. One is, broadly speaking, organizations, which we say is B2B, business to business. And they spend a lot of money. But we also have the ultimate consumer. Y'all buy as well. So the two broad categories are B2B and B2C. Business to business, business to consumer. Why do people buy? Why do people spend money on these things? How do consumers benefit? Well, now we go back one more time to your microeconomics course. And we think about the idea of utility. You remember utility as a concept from micro? Utility, bless you, is the satisfaction, the value, or the usefulness that a user gets from a good or service that they purchase. So the reason consumers spend their money is they get utility value for what they spend. And it takes different types of utility. Any ice cream lovers here? Anybody, holy mackerel, anybody make ice cream at home, ever? Nobody's made ice? Oh, you've made ice cream at home. So is that a pretty quick, easy, simple process? You want ice cream now and you go make, you know, make ice cream and you have it in a few minutes?
Yeah, my family's got an ice cream maker.
The electric kind?
Yeah.
Okay, so for people that don't know, it's an electric device, but what has to happen to it to make ice cream? Do you know?
You got to pour like a lot of sugar and milk.
Sugar,
a lot of stirring.
Milk, a lot of stirring, and if you do it by hand, it's even more.
Right.
What about flavoring?
There's also there's weird things. You can do like chocolate bits, you can do...
Flavorings, what about ice? To make it cold?
There is a lot of ice they have to add, but the new ones are a little bit cooler. You don't have to do it.
Okay. So I want some ice cream, and you know, an hour and a half later, with just a little bit of work, I could have ice cream. Or I could go ice cream, buy Ben & Jerry's ice cream, for example. So that is the idea of form utility. Sure, I could do that, but I don't want to do that. I'm willing to pay somebody to take all those ingredients and poof, make a product for me, because I don't want to do all that. That's form utility. So Ben & Jerry's turn cream, sugar, and milk into ice cream. Who likes Ben & Jerry's, by the way? I didn't bring any today, but just curious. Place utility. you got to pay attention here. You're going to miss the ice cream truck. Here it comes. Woo! You missed it. Sorry. How many of you guys used to, as kids, go to run out for the ice cream truck? Is that still a thing? Yeah, I hear the bell dinging, right? So you want that product where you want it. Place utility. And you're willing to pay to have it in the place you want it at. I don't know if that's good English or not. Anybody coffee drinkers? Any heavy coffee drinkers here? Coffee drinkers make coffee beans. Where do coffee beans come from? Where? Starbucks. Where does Starbucks get them? Colombia, around the world, but say Colombia. That is not an easy drive. If you want coffee each morning, you have to drive to Colombia and pick up some beans and then grind them. Obviously, that's stupid. Orange juice, any farm products, you're willing to pay somebody, Starbucks, to have it available in the form you want it, where you want it. How difficult would life be if that didn't happen, if that service wasn't provided to you? It'd be silly. How would you live your life? So you're willing to pay people to provide place utility. Time utility. You not only want the thing where you want it, you would like it when you want it. So your Walmart Super Center is open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. You can get ice cream anytime you want it. Yes, that's value to me. I want that. And possession utility. Anybody lucky enough to buy a new car? Are you guys in a situation where you can buy a new car? Oh, all the way in the back. Is it worth me running up there to find out? I don't know if you can track me all the way up there. Let's take a minute, because I haven't run enough today. So you bought yourself a new car. Congratulations, sir. I hope you're happy with your new product. So when you bought it, did you just give them cash and you were done? You gave them cash and you took the car home with you? Oh, you did? Real, actual cash? He didn't help me at all. So many people are not lucky enough to be able to pay cash for a product, for a car. So what do they have to do? Take out a loan, or if it's less expensive, put it on credit, right? So it is the loan, the credit, the debit that helps you to gain possession of that car. And if you don't have cash for it, how are you getting a car? Stuck on that one, because they're only taking cash today. No. We will help you take possession of that product through things like credit, debit, to make the purchase of the product more attractive to the consumer. But somebody's got to pay for that too. So those utilities, those things are valuable to me. Marketing helps to provide all of that stuff. There's my debit or credit card. Do not go out and use my card. So this takes us to the end of chapter one, which is the issue of marketing creating value for consumers. If you really want to know more about the role of the CMO, the chief marketing officer, you could go out there. I think that's still a good link. But that's the initial setup for our course. And I sure hope I see chapter two here. And whoever I need to share chapter two with, I will do that later. All right, here we go. So now we're going to talk about developing successful marketing and organizational strategies. And we should be on lecture notes page 34, chapter two of the book. Let's think about a company and their strategy. How many of you guys know Kodak, right? Kodak is synonymous with photography. Their print processing methods were global and technologies ahead of the competition. But the company ultimately came crashing down because it didn't change its marketing strategy with the changing times. Changing consumer needs, wants, and desires, changing technology, changing competition mean you've got to be attuned to things and make changes. I'm not going to make changes. I sold cameras and film for 135 years, and I'm not changing. By God, I'm selling. That's what I do. Okay, you're out of business. Kodak invented the digital camera in 1975, somewhere I had one of those. Even though they produced a report on predicted future trends in the market, management decided that the technology would not disrupt the photographic industry, and so they did not need to make any changes. They had 10 years to act, but they didn't. The company lost 75% of its value before filing for bankruptcy in 2012. Nobody took marketing 25010. Nobody could foresee that this might have impactful change with the consumer, with the market, given the competition and change of technology. Nah, we'll just do what we've been doing. Strategy is fairly important to the company. You have to understand it. It has to drive you. GM ushers in an electric era with an ambitious brand refresh, inclusive marketing campaign. GM's new strategy is to position the company for an all-electric future by building a multi-brand, multi-segment electric vehicle strategy based on economies of scale, reduced complexity, and significant flexibility. To support the strategy, GM has debuted a new marketing campaign called Everybody In, meant to reflect a movement that's inclusive and accessible. The company is also evolving its brand identity as GM transforms itself to deliver on a vision that creates a world with zero crashes, zero emissions, and zero congestion. They redesigned the brand logo down there, featuring lowercase letters with an underlined M and a more vibrant blue hue to evoke the clearer skies of an emissions zero future. It also includes in the Everybody M, see if we can get this up.
We are Generation E.
United.
Not by age.
We want smart,
clean, and safe.
To also be fun, easy,
and powerful.
All damn.
Nobody will be left out.
Okay, well, that was a little louder than I wanted it to be. But the point is, here's a new campaign for them based on a new strategy, based on changing situations. This ad campaign mirrors the thematic motif of positivity as a diverse cast of narrators share lines like, "We emit optimism, not exhaust." While the Everybody In messaging will be a key part of GM's marketing, individual brands owned by the automaker will stay focused on their own outreach strategies, different segments. And it's about corporate brand that we're seeing this change. Changes in strategy to reflect changing technology, changing consumer needs, wants, and desires, as opposed to, hey, you can get any colored car you want as long as it's black. That's not working these days. All right, so strategic planning from a business viewpoint. Ben Franklin, you remember him, said, look, by failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail. See Kodak. The Cheshire Cat, one of my favorite gurus, if you don't know where you want to go, then it doesn't matter which path you take. Oh, you want to be on this segment, that segment. Oh, well, it doesn't much matter what you do. You're going out of business, but it doesn't much matter what you do. You got a plan. Corporate strategy is used by all firms, whether we're talking about profit or not-for-profit, manufacturer or service, entrepreneurship or a global corporation. It's an organization's long-term course of action. And what's it trying to do? To deliver a unique customer experience. Because if you don't deliver a unique customer experience, why would any customer want to buy from you while achieving whatever your organization goals are? You got to have a strategy. And your strategy has to be updated periodically. Under the corporate strategy, then, of course, we have marketing strategy. This is where we select, analyze, focus on a target market, a group of people that have needs, wants, and desires congruent with whatever our corporate strategy is. So we're going to analyze those folks. We're going to create and maintain an appropriate marketing mix to that group of people with the hope of delivering a unique customer experience while achieving our organizational goals. The goals for Patagonia are different than the goals for McDonald's. And marketing has to be subservient to those corporate goals. Whether you're a profit or not-for-profit organization, you need to have a strategy to set your direction to achieve your goals. If you don't know where you're going, it doesn't matter what you do, because you have no goal in mind. Not a good business plan. Not a good life plan, by the way, but not a good business plan either. So we'll return to this framework over and over again during the course. And I just mentioned marketing strategy. But I'm going to focus in a bit on the company mission and objectives. This gets to a little bit of a concern I have. Not all students, but some students come in here thinking, marketing, I'm going to learn how to sell kumquats to Gen Z in Akron, Ohio. That's marketing. That's not what I do. That's in the weeds. That's at the grassroots level of stuff. We have courses that will help you do that, not this course. And we have organizations that will help you do that. Entrepreneurship, I can show you the lab. They'll help you to do that. Small Business Development Center, help you to do that. This is a broader, higher level thing. So we start at the 30,000 foot level above your first job, above selling kumquats to Gen Z in Akron, at corporate mission. And we'll work our way down over time to the 10,000 foot level, product, price, place, promotion. But this is not the exciting course that's going to teach you how to sell those kumquats successfully to a group in a particular city. So that's not this. All right, so we're going to start company mission objectives and strategy. Eventually, that's going to influence marketing strategy. The board of directors typically oversees three levels of strategy within organizations. The corporate level, and then if you're a big enough company, you have different areas focused on different markets, the strategic business unit level, and then down to what you guys do when you first hire into a company, down to that functional level, information systems, finance, research and development, marketing, manufacturing, and HR. So you start down here, presumably one day you'd like to go up there. And those are the people driving the business overall. So we have different levels of strategy. Okay? Corporate, strategic business unit, department level strategy. At the corporate level, we're talking about the C level. So CEO, what's CEO?
Chief Executive Officer.
CFO, Chief Financial Officer, and CMO, Chief Marketing Officer. Okay? So those are those folks up there. Top management sets and directs the overall strategy for the firm at that 30,000 foot level, working its way down to the front line. For entrepreneurs, who typically is going to be the CEO, CFO, and CMO? The entrepreneur themselves, right? Oftentimes, they are everything. And they also, by the way, are washing the dishes and sweeping the floor. They're doing everything. It's a little different, of course. Maybe Tim Appel, a small entrepreneur, does all those things. Rob Felber in the B2B world, selling marketing services. Gary Trinetti, he's a little higher up, I think. Strategic business units, that's a division, a product line, or a profit center that sells a distinct set of products or services to a distinct market segment against well-defined competition. When we see Fred Hunt, who pops up periodically from Sherwin-Williams, his business at the time was in the B2B world. He was selling Sherwin-Williams paints to businesses, if I recall correctly. Of course, there's a whole other segment out there, a whole other different strategic business unit, selling to you, the consumer, out of Sherwin-Williams stores. That wasn't him, different strategic business unit. On the next slide, we take a look at the SBUs from a well-known company, P&G. Where's P&G headquartered? Anybody ever hear of P&G?
Mason, Ohio?
Yeah, Cincinnati in general. Mason, maybe in particular, that I'm not sure about, but I would say Cincinnati. Are you from Mason?
No, I have a friend.
Friend there. Okay, I think it's they consider it Cincinnati, but Mason's right next door, right near, what's that big amusement park?
Kings Island.
Right near Kings Island. For example, P&G operates through five industry-based strategic business units, or SBUs: baby, feminine and family care, beauty, healthcare, grooming, and fabric and home care. You can see that the target market for fabric and home care might be different than the target market for baby care. Different products, different needs, different types of consumers, yeah. So you have a different strategic business unit focused on them. And they do it both for consumers on the one side and businesses on the other side, enterprise marketing. Strategic business units operate in markets that have different sizes, different growth rates, different external opportunities and threats, against different competition, and different profit potential. So it requires a fairly sophisticated group of managers to manage different strategic business units. And the corporate planners have to be knowledgeable about these different markets as they do their planning, as they allocate their resources, as they evaluate performances. You don't get the same performance today out of EV vehicles, electric vehicles, as you do out of trucks. They're different market segments. They have different bases from which we work. So Don Kosek over at, we see him at Time Warner Business Services, but he's now Spectrum Businesses. That's a company name now. He focuses on selling product to business. Is there another side that sells product to consumers? Sure, but that's not his problem. Somebody else's problem. He has a different strategy in mind. They had at one time, and maybe still do, three business units: the residential services, business services, and media services. So that would have been their three strategic business units. Now, strategy can be made then at these three different levels: the corporate level, the strategic business level, or the functional or department level. But marketing's department's key role is to listen to the customer. What are their needs, wants, and desires? How satisfied are they? How do they feel about competition? What else do they want going on? Develop offerings of value to them. Do they want low price? Do they want quick delivery? Do they want convenience? Do they want fashion? Do they want high price? What do they want? What do they value? Implement the marketing program that they put together, that product, place, promotion mix. Hi, how you're doing? Here's the thing. And then evaluate how successful that program is. Did it work? Did it do what we wanted it to do? Okay? So that's taking it down from the corporate level to the marketing department. So an organization has at its core its values, whatever those values are, which should drive its mission or its vision for whoever you want to be. And then that in turn should drive each of the individual strategic business unit goals, whether it's family or industrial paints, whatever it is you're talking about. That in turn will drive the marketing strategy for that particular target market, and that in turn will help you create the marketing plan. That mix of product, place, price, promotion, the four P's. Your core values drive your mission, your goals, and your plans. So it's useful for somebody to know what those goals are. The mission statement ideally should be a clear and succinct representation of your enterprise's purpose for its existence. It should incorporate criteria addressing things like your moral ethical position, your public image, your target market, the products and services that your area will focus on, your geographic domain, and the expectations that we have for growth and profitability. Anybody, a bunch of hands went up when I asked you if you worked. Anybody work for a company that actually gave you their mission statement on a little plastic card, for example? Are you able to share, or you don't want to talk about the company?
Works for Victoria's Secret.
OK, Victoria's Secret.
Yeah.
We're going to talk later about Victoria's Secret and their ups and downs. But say again?
They're under a lot of fire.
Then they have some other issues about their segment approach. I think we're going to get into that. But the point is, they gave you a card. It was their mission. And hypothetically, as an employee, you would look at it occasionally and know this is who we are, what we stand for. Whether or not it's successful right now is a different area,
yeah.
But that was the way they wanted to make sure that from that 30,000-foot level to the front level,
yeah.
people knew what we were about. And you'll often find that in organizations, yeah? The intent of the mission statement then should be the first consideration for any employee who is evaluating a strategic decision. Should we fill in the blank? Should we be engage in diversity in our product line, our product mix, our catalogs as Victoria's Secret? Is that what we should be doing? Yes? No? Why? What's our intent? Nordstrom. Who shops at Nordstrom? Just two guys. That's all the people that shop at Nordstrom, and one woman. Probably see my wife at Nordstrom. To continue our dedication to providing a unique range of products, exceptional customer service, and great expectations. That's a pretty good mission. To continue our dedication to providing a unique range of products, exceptional customer service, and great experiences. Its mission statement perfectly describes its company spirit of going above and beyond to satisfy the consumer. It also states how Nordstrom is not just a simple retailer like, say, Walmart. It is and has always been a high-end business that prides itself on offering its customers the exceptional. And to the extent that you felt that way when you dealt with them, they were being successful. Things were working. All right, so here we are, as I just said, at the top of all of this, the company mission and objectives driving everything we see in the little model here.
It's a fairly recent.
So let's hear a little bit over at business-to-business environment, Timken, talking a little bit about their company mission, objectives, and how where they situate today.
It's a fairly recent vision. Going back even 10 years, our mission vision was worldwide leader in bearings and steel. Okay, so it kind of put us into a box of bearings and steel in terms of what we could do and where we could expand into. And our new mission vision is improving customer performance. And what that allows us to do is think outside of the box in terms of whether it's service or product. What can we offer the customer that will improve their customer performance? And so that has led to an expansion of our product line and our service capabilities just in the last 10 years that, you know, 109 years ago at the beginning of the Timken Company would have never dreamed we would tackle. The one thing that's interesting about that is we've also amended that vision to say we will provide value for those customers that are willing to pay for the value we create. And what that does, it looks out for the shareholder and says that, you know, we are not going to enter industries and service customers that where the value proposition is all about reducing cost of our product, because we found those industries and those customers, we don't earn a return on our capital. And so in the main, we focus now on those customers and industries that are willing to, the way we put it, pay for the value we create.
So if I said to you there was a company in this field whose mission was to be the worldwide leader in bearings and steel, and you hadn't had this course, we hadn't been talking about this, would you hear that and say, that's dumb? Why would you want to do that? Does that seem like, on its surface, a dumb statement? Worldwide leader in bearings and steel? Seems reasonable, yeah? But what's the problem? Well, for one thing, it's a product focus. It doesn't have anything to do with the customer and their satisfaction. And it puts you in a box about how you think of what you're doing. Bearings and steel. In their field, their bearings are used by very, very high-end, expensive, in very, very high-end expensive machines, like wind turbines. If the bearing in a wind turbine goes down, it's ridiculously problematic. It's not generating any energy. It's expensive to repair and fix. They used to give away for free maintenance advice on the bearings and how they're being used in different generators and different products. And one day they woke up and said, you know what? We could enhance this entire area of service, maintenance, suggestions, etc., create an area around it, and sell that to industrial consumers for whom this is worth a lot of money. Outside the box, they changed their mission. Then this idea of for consumers who are willing to pay, they could create a bearing that would last in your car 150 years. Wouldn't be a problem for them to do that. And it wouldn't cost that much money. Do car manufacturers want a bearing in your car that lasts 150 years? They do not, for more than one reason. No car is going to last 150 years, but they don't mind if it wears out after 10 or 15 years. Get a new car, replace the bearing. So I was working with some EMBAs, executive MBAs, when they made this transition with the company, and a guy came to me and said, you know, it's funny, Timken no longer pays as much attention to us, to our company, to our business. I said, well, that's too bad. I'm sorry to hear that. I said, how does your company view bearings? Or they see it as a high-end important product within their, you know, overall component in their overall product? He said, well, no, we sort of see it as a commodity. Meaning it's not a high value product for them. They don't. So Timken would still sell you bearings, but they're not going to give you a lot of service because you're not really willing to pay for what they offer. So this change in strategy made them rethink their customer base, made them rethink their product offerings, and turned out to be quite profitable for them. Thank you. This is Valerie, if I can get her talking. She's providing a service.
Our mission is to provide healthcare and human capital consulting to veterans, service members, and their families. That is our core mission. That is all we do. So if a business opportunity is not in the area of healthcare or human capital, which is benefits for this target market, we don't do it. So what that means is, let's say we're in the market, we're doing this relationship selling where we're talking to our clients and saying, what do you need, what do you need? And they say, hey, we really need an IT system that helps us process data faster. We won't do it because that is not in our mission, that is not in our core target area. That is what we do. We provide healthcare and human capital for these areas. We don't do it if it's not in that area.
I guarantee you, you're going to work for a company somewhere, sometime, and their sales force is going to say to a client, oh, sure, to make the sale, we can do that. Provide IT to your company because it needs it in order to implement our system. And then they're going to come back and say, how are we going to do that? We don't know how to do whatever that is. Bad mistake. It's off your mission. You don't have the skill set. You don't know how you're going to do that. And yet people do say, sure, we'll do it. You can't. It's a disaster waiting to happen. What should Valerie say to such a company? In order to implement our outstanding product, and we've talked about all the benefits, you need to have a better IT system. Now, we don't do IT systems per se, but I can recommend 1, 2, 3 companies that we've worked with before that can help bring your IT system up to spec. We can make the sale. You don't just say, oh, we can do that. It's outside your mission. You can't do it. Yet people do. They're not paying attention. Customers aren't going to be satisfied. I think you know from other management courses that your goals or objectives should be, quote, SMART. They should be specific. How do you know if you're achieving a goal if you don't know what the goal is? Measurable. I think we should grow our sales. What? Sure. How much? By when? What percent? Should be attainable. Has anybody ever worked for a company where they set your goals and whatever the new goal was? You can't do that. It's not attainable. Okay, was that motivating for you? They set a goal that you know you can't do. It's just ridiculous. Did that motivate you? Of course not. Could we give you a stretch goal that might motivate you? Sure. You got to increase your sales by 5 times. Are you crazy? We can't do that. Relevant to whatever your situation is, obviously. And then time-based, when do you want to accomplish whatever that goal or objective is? So arguably, you've heard about this idea of SMART goals or objectives in management before. And this is the way your business should operate. So for example, Time Warner Business Services' goal was to keep their business growing at 25% per year in their region. Specific, yeah. Measurable, I think. Attainable, well, I trust it is. Relevant, obviously. Time-based, yes. So we got it. Seems like those are SMART goals. These then drive our marketing objectives. So here is Don talking about it.
We have approximately 20-some thousand customers on the business side, and I believe the addressable market here is about 150,000 businesses or so in our footprint. We actually go up through Erie, PA too, so we have a little bit of that. So what we look at when we determine growth rates and things like that, okay, how many businesses are out there? Market penetration, where are we built out, passings of some sort, and what can we do to keep growing that business 25% or more per year?
So that becomes their SMART goals and objectives. And then they develop a marketing program to help them to accomplish that goal and objective. So now we're going to focus on those businesses in the area.
Cooking for a crowd has never fazed us. It's what we'd love to do. That's why we started our catering business. But finding the right internet and phone provider, ugh. We just wanted services we could count on that didn't break the bank. Then we heard about Spectrum Business. Best services, best price, and no contracts. We called them and we were up and running in no time. It was so easy.
Make the right choice for your business. Get reliable internet and voice for less and no contracts from Spectrum Business.
So here we have our goals in our area, 25% growth rate. What are you doing to support those goals, make them happen? Creating a promotional mix to businesses that's going to appeal to them in terms of the value they get, in terms of the price that they have, in terms of their offerings. So there are a lot of types of goals your organization could have. This is not a comprehensive list, but maybe your company's going to be focused on the profit that you make. Maybe it's going to be focused on certain dollar levels of sales or certain unit levels of sales. Or market share. How big do you want to be in the marketplace? Do you want to be first, second, third? Can you be a teeny player? What sort of quality do you want to have as a goal? Do you want to be high quality? Do you want to be acceptable quality? I trust you can't be low quality and stay in business, but acceptable. Not everybody needs high quality. Customer satisfaction could be a goal. Efficiency, employee welfare could be a goal. And of course, we talked about already, social responsibility could be another type of goal. So you can have lots of different types of goals depending on your organization, your marketplace, your consumers. This was Portage County Health Services goals. When I put this together, I thought this was Portage County, Ohio. It turns out it's Portage County, Washington State, but that's not important. So what were their actual goals? They said at the time, by next year, 90% of pregnant women will receive prenatal care in the first trimester. That seems pretty smart, measurable, relevant time. By next year, the percentage of teen pregnancies will decrease to 7% or less of all pregnancies. By next year, low birth rate babies will constitute no more than 5% of all live births. Those seem to me to be pretty smart goals driven by the organization, not a profit organization, trying to accomplish health for the county they're in. So here are the 3.5 C's, I'm being a little cute with my terminology here, you'll see why in a second, of setting your strategic directions, and that is understanding where we are now. First of all, what are your competencies? You don't know how to do IT work, don't go telling consumers you'll do it. So the half C here under competencies is, what is your competitive advantage? What is your unique selling proposition? What do you do better than anybody else that causes consumers to want to come to you? You have to understand that or else you lose it. I didn't know that's why they were coming here. Oops. You certainly have to understand your customers, who they are, their needs, wants, desires, understand them in detail. And then, who is your competition? What are they doing? How are they satisfying the marketplace? What are they doing that's going to make them, your consumers more happy with them than they are with you? It's hard to move forward with strategy if you don't understand your companies, your competitive advantage, your customers, and who your competitors are. So again, a lot of eyes going a lot of different ways as you try to understand all these things. We good? So how does our good friend COVID impact all of this? Well, in crisis situations, such as the COVID pandemic, but go fill in your own crisis, which are subject to rapid change, marketers need a proactive plan to adjust and adapt to how they speak to their customers, how they manage their brands, how they manage your teams. They need to engage in advanced scenario planning. Anybody happen to watch the TV show 5 Days In? It's a hospital name. Anybody know what I'm talking about? It was a hospital that, it was in New Orleans during Katrina. Katrina, as you may recall from history, flooded the entire town. Things were blown down. It was a disaster area. The hospital had zero evacuation plan, not just in this crisis. They had no plan at all. They had 2,000 people in the hospital. A bunch died. They had no plan at all. That's not good planning. No plan at all. So, scenario planning. What happens in an ABC scenario? Listen for changes in customer sentiment and behavior. Oh, gee, people are moving away from photography, film photography, to electronics. I can see them moving. Maybe I should be paying attention to that. Kodak. Anticipate operational impacts. Hard to do. Obviously, we were not able to see the supply chain disasters that were coming at us during the pandemic, and some of us are still suffering under now. And then, adapt your marketing plan. So this is part of the strategic plan for crisis situations. Where do you want to go? Would be the next part of setting your strategic direction. Do you want to grow? Is that your strategy? In a crisis situation, maybe you want to do is just sustain. Man, all I want to do. Do you guys know any small businesses during the pandemic that just wanted to hang on? Growth was not in their picture. Man, they just wanted to make it through this crisis. And they probably did things to make that happen. Business restaurants are only open 4 days a week instead of 7 days a week. They can't get staff, whatever it is. Divest. This particular thing isn't working for me. You buy it. You can do better with it than I can. Or, of course, invest. So where do you want to go is going to drive your decision making. The way we would do this in a large organization is through something called product portfolio analysis. I would love to tell you about it. It's so exciting to hear about the BCG group model, but I'm out of time. Till next time, which would be when? Next Monday, right? Okay, see you then.